Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Well, welcome everybody to today's radio program called The Mountain Grapevine here in Marshall in Madison County, North Carolina. On the telephone today, we have Ken Parker. Ken is the owner and general manager of the Souther Williams Mountain Vineyard. So, Ken, tell us about this vineyard of yours.
Sure, Chuck. I appreciate that. Souther Williams is a brand new vineyard located in Fletcher, North Carolina. I've been in and around the wine business on the retail side for a number of years, and this is our first extension into the growing side, and I'm pleased to do it on my old family farm. It's been in the family for over 200 years, so we're excited to be able to bring it back into production and feature varietals of grapes that are really predominant in the Eastern European and Russian regions of the world. So we're bringing some very unique varietals of grapes to the North Carolina area.
Well, tell us about some of these unusual names of grapes. Most people in the world don't realize that there's 15,000 varieties total, but most people can't name 10. So tell us about the specific ones that you're growing there.
Well, a couple that come to mind right off the bat, one called the Capsicelli, and that is one that is grown a little bit in North Carolina. Second one, which is not grown in North Carolina at all, is called Saparavi. Right now it is grown in the New York Finger Lakes region, and that's where we get our source from, actually, but it originates to the Georgia region, is the Russian area from a regional perspective.
Are you growing any normal ones that somebody might recognize?
We have Vidal Blanc, which is actually one of our premier whites. We also have Grüner Veltliner, which is an Austrian white, a very crisp white, and grown on the hillside portion of our vineyard on 60-degree inclines. And we have a couple of other whites that are going in pretty much as we speak, a Petit Mansing, and then we will also feature another Russian white next year.
Well, I know the Petit Mansing is a relatively new grape this region. I'm aware of one or two other vineyards that have been using it over the last couple of years, and they've made some fantastic wines out of it, and it seems to be very adept at growing in this particular region. So I think you have good luck with that one.
Well, thanks. We're excited about that one, and it is grown very limited here in North Carolina. We feel like it'll do really well given our altitude. You know, our mountain vineyard is located at about 2,600 feet in elevation. We're really trying to feature wines that one, are a little bit different and give customers an alternative selection, and two, that we believe will adapt very well to our climate.
Explain to us a little bit about how you came to make the decisions you did about which grapes to grow.
In our instance, the priority was what would grow well in our climate. Again, we're at a higher elevation, which affects your growing season. It affects your temperatures, of course, for the grapes ripening and so forth. So, you know, that figured heavily into our selection. Second was our terrain, the terroir, as it's called in the industry. We are a combination of very flat, old tobacco land. We actually had a tobacco allocation in years gone by. So that's very flat, very fertile ground that hasn't been farmed in past years. And then we have some terrain which ranges from gently rolling, we'll call it, up to a very steep incline, as I indicated earlier, 60-degree inclines on one portion of the vineyard where the Grüner is growing. So, again, we tried to really target our varietals based on those hillside selections because particularly, you know, Austrian grapes, as an example, do extremely well on hillside planting. And then, you know, our Cabernet Franc, some of our red varietals, our Cinthiana, we're also featuring a Limburger, and those are planted more in the flatlands.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you had to do to the land to get it ready.
I think the biggest thing that we discovered in our own vineyard was, of course, just the pH deficiencies, and I think is the most important fact. The soil pH has to be properly balanced for whatever crop you're growing. And you know, in our case, really targeting the pH to be in that 6.0 to 6.8 kind of range. Other than that, it's just the standard feeding of nutrients to the grapes as, you know, as required on our schedule. We tend to give them, a balanced fertilizer application a couple of times a year. Other than that, wasn't a lot of prep going into it. It was more prep around, you know, actually setting up the trellis systems and things like that, which, of course, is not related to the soil, but a lot of work, really to get to the point of having the vineyard functioning.
Well, tell us about the trellising system you use.
Right now, we're using two different types of trellis systems. We're using a modified vertical shoot positioning for the majority of our grapes, and then we're using a Geneva double curtain for our Cynthiana, which, of course, Cynthiana tends to grow downward versus a lot of the grape varietals, which tend to, you know, have their shoots more vertically positioned going upward. On the Geneva double curtain, grows to the highest point on the trellis system and then trails downward, much like a vine, so it creates an umbrella effect.
Well, for people out there who don't know, trellising really depends upon the variety of grape that you're growing. And as you said, this downward growth habit of the Norton means that you have to accommodate it, let it droop down. But most of the European, not all, but most of them have what we call an upward growth habit, which means you have to have some sort of a lyre or a multiple wire catch system to keep the wind from breaking them.
That's exactly right. And in our case, we use a 7-wire system. You know, we have a single wire as the first wire closest to the ground, which allows us to, you know, train our cordons for, you know, growth. And then, you know, as we get our annual growth, those shoots are then trained up through the other sets of wires up to the top of the trellis system, which is about 6 feet off the ground.
When you were doing the research on your grapes, I'm sure you had this in mind. Where did you actually run across these particular varieties, and why did you pick those?
You know, as we did our research, and you know, I was quite familiar. We've been in and around, like I say, the wine business for a long time. So I think the biggest challenge for us was, again, settling on the varietals that we wanted in the vineyard, too, and then being able to source those varietals. For instance, our Saperavi is sourced only in one area in this country. And so, you know, you've got to be a little diligent in terms of making sure that once you select your varietals that you can indeed get them and that they are approved. You know, I think the other thing, you know, that was important in our case, because we wanted to feature more of the alternative types of wines, we really weren't planting the standard North Carolina or even the United States varietals like Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay and, you know, all those things that people can traditionally get very easily. We really wanted to feature things that were different, that would bring a different selection for people's palate and give them a different experience.
How many acres of grapes do you have right now, Ken?
We currently have 5 acres under vine, and over the next 18 months, we'll be putting in another 5 acres. So we'll ultimately have about 10 acres under vine.
And what's your projected tonnage off of the 10 acres?
Typically, you target about 3 tons per acre as an average yield that one shoots for. It differs based on the varietal that you're producing. Some of our varietals will produce smaller tonnage per acre. For instance, our Limburger, I expect that we will probably be in the 2 to 2.5 tons per acre. And our Vidal Blanc, I suspect we'll probably be around 5 tons per acre. So, but on average, about 3 tons per acre. I expect that we will be in the neighborhood of 2,000 cases a year when we're at full production.
What's your plan on putting your winery in place?
Well, that's still evolving, Chuck. We are working on some tasting room designs right now, which we expect to build our tasting room next year. This year, we are focused on an outdoor event center so that we will be able to offer the venue for outdoor weddings and other, you know, family reunions and things of that nature. And initially, we'll use a custom crush facility with operations yet to be defined, but we'll get around to the winery hopefully based on the success of our production and demand for our wines.
So what is your anticipated opening when we can come down and taste some of these yummy things?
Our expectation right now is that we will produce our first vintage of whites next year. We expect that the Vidal Blanc will be ready next year. We're about 2 years in operation now, so in our third year, we expect to get perhaps about a 35% yield, and so we'll be able to produce some limited amounts of our white wines next year.
Okay, that sounds great. What is your position on the license application stuff for the winery?
We have not started the winery application yet. As I say, you know, our initial focus will be around custom crush and developing a relationship with a facility that will, you know, essentially take our grapes, they will blend the wines to our specs, and then we'll take the finished product back and retail it in our tasting rooms on site.
Okay, so the custom crush, for the audience who's unfamiliar with the terminology, means that you take your grapes someplace else, have them actually make the wine, put it in bottles, put your label on it, and then bring it back to your facility so you can sell it.
Yeah, and I think it's important there to note in that process, because, you know, there are instances in the industry where, you know, people will actually, you know, take another person or another firm's wine, and you know, they're called shiners, and they have different terms, but basically then private label that. That's not what we're doing at all. These will be our grapes. We are merely outsourcing the production of the wine in the early stages, but it will be blended to our specifications. It will be our grapes that will be used in the wines, and again, the bottles will come back to us with our labels and everything, and that process will be, you know, 100% pure Souther Williams Mountain Vineyard grapes.
Who's doing the custom crush in your area?
That's still a discussion underway.
I understand that. That kind of thing takes a while to get negotiated and put in order. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the host winery has to have a special type of license to allow custom crush.
We do, because there's, of course, a consumable product involved. You know, it still will be licensed and, of course, monitored and managed by the state and distributed through a combination of either a state distributor, if we hit the production level that allows us to do that, or, of course, it will be retailed on our property, which, of course, we have to have a license for that as well.
We've been talking with Ken Parker, who's the owner and general manager of the Souther Williams Mountain Vineyard down in Fletcher, North Carolina. We'll be right back, folks, so hang on.
Today's program is being brought to you by Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper. Those of us who live in log homes or have old barns are familiar with the annual onslaught of swarms of carpenter bees here in the mountains. Those suckers are about the size of a small hummingbird and can cause a lot of damage to your wooden buildings. For you city folks, carpenter bees bore a half-inch diameter holes into the wood to lay their eggs. Some holes have been measured to be over 12 inches deep. They keep coming back year after year, too, to lay their eggs. And they keep drilling new holes. They can totally destroy the ability of a timber to hold up a roof section if they are not controlled. Carrie Caldwell lives back in Spring Creek in an old log barn that she remodeled into a living space for her family. It's a great old classic tobacco barn that she fixed up. Carrie noticed the carpenter bees begin swarming in it around her barn early spring that year. Carrie tried plugging the holes with wooden dowels. The carpenter bees just ate through them, going in and out at will. She tried using expansion foam to fill the holes. After it dried, the bees kept drilling through that too. While doing some research on the problem at the Madison County Library, she read that each carpenter bee was responsible for laying up to 60 eggs each season. She reckoned if she could kill the carpenter bee, she would prevent that new crop from hatching. She didn't like chemicals or poisons, so she thought of another idea. She would swat them as they hovered just in front of their holes just before going in to build a nest. She made a thin wooden paddle and nailed it to a short piece of old broken broomstick. Now she could swat the bees as they flew into and out of the holes during the nesting season. It proved to be an effective way to kill the carpenter bees. She killed over 50 the first day. She figured that prevented 3,000 eggs from being laid. At the end of the season, she had racked up over 185 bees. Next season, there were substantially fewer carpenter bees flying around, but she swatted them anyway. After the third year, hardly a one could be seen. I had Carrie make one for me, and I found it works very well in reducing the carpenter bee population around our farm buildings, as well as our house. Carrie now has her kids making the bee slappers to sell to make some extra money for their school supplies. Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper is another fine product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County. You can buy Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking on the phone with Ken Parker, the owner and general manager of Souther Williams Mountain Vineyard down in Fletcher, North Carolina. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the geography here, that's not too far from the Asheville Airport, if I recall. Ken, before the break, we were talking about the kinds of things you've been getting into and so forth. Tell us a little bit more about the outdoor event center that you have there and what you plan to do with that.
Right now, the center will be comprised of primarily outdoor seating. We will have a small, we'll call it a chapel, but it's an outdoor facility which will allow people to, for instance, get married right in the edge of the vineyard with the vineyard as a backdrop and background. We also have, right now, it will be built a little bit later this year, a 4,000-square-foot, you know, basically enclosed building. It'll have open sides, but it'll be under roof. And we'll have the ability to seat, I think right now the seating intention is around 225 people, you know, for, again, weddings or family reunions or any other, you know, type of outdoor event. And, again, that pavilion will be located right at the end of one of our primary vineyards where the Cynthiana is located, and we'll be looking, you know, a great mountain view and looking across the valley and across all of our vines. So it will be very much an idyllic setting for those special events.
Well, it sounds like a good place to go if you're going to be planning a wedding down that way.
We hope people here in the area will certainly embrace it, and again, we're excited to offer it to our customers.
Well, Ken, one of the things that we like to do with folks who are spending time with us on the radio is to ask them about some historical things, about what you did right and what would you do different next time. I guess maybe it's like lessons learned about putting in a vineyard or starting a winery. What could you share with us on that front?
In our case, because we did so much research on the varietals and the soils, and we knew the types of soils when we were going in, and we really, you know, I think worked hard to make sure the orientation of our vines was correct so that we got an east-west exposure on the grapes as the sun passed over them during the day. And I think that's critical to make sure that your positioning of your vines and what you're trying to accomplish in your vineyard as you lay it out is absolutely critical. I think the second thing people need to really spend a lot of time on as they're planning the vineyard, as you do your research, there just is a tremendous amount of information out there that gives great business case information and, you know, tells you really what to expect in terms of cost that you will incur, not only in the setup and establishment of the vineyard, but the ongoing operations of the vineyard as well. And, you know, the one caution I would say there is take that number and multiply it by about two. So that's one of those lessons learned that, you know, particularly, you know, in our case, because we had been an operational farm, we had some of the equipment. But if one is starting from scratch and does not have the equipment, or even more so if you don't have the land and you're having to acquire the land and prep the land, even, you know, for instance, in tree clearing to have the vineyard, then those costs can really start to drive it to a point that may become an unwise business case. So I would encourage people to just really spend the time and look at all those numbers and crunch those things. Being in the vineyard business, you know, most people will tell you that you really don't get an ROI and a payback on your investment in the wine, in particularly the vineyard, for about 10 to 12 years.
10 to 12 years sounds about right with what I've seen with a lot of vineyards around the world, so that sounds good. What did you think you did right from the get-go that you either accidentally did or planned for?
You know, I think in our case, because we spent the extra time really planning, we kind of went into it with a vision that we knew we wanted varietals of grapes that were different, that were really, you know, not widely available here in North Carolina. So we really spent the time to make sure our selection of our varietals fit the property and it fit the model and our vision of what we were trying to do. So I would certainly say that's, you know, that's one thing we did right. You know, some other things that you know, we've learned a better way. For instance, we started early on in really focusing on trying to minimize our chemical usage in the vineyard, and there's just certain things that you know, you just can't get around not using chemicals, but we really tried to minimize our chemical usage, and and be very selective about what we use and how we use it and when we use it and where we have the opportunity to use different types of organic methods of pest control or fungus control in the grapes. You know, we're very intent on doing so. So I think, again, that's an area where we did something right. You know, I think there were a lesson learned. Again, it's use automation where you can. You know, it's still a very manual operation, and we're trying to embrace automation where we can. So that's a learning experience and an ongoing one.
I know the viticulture industry has a variety of people, everything from growing grapes biodynamically to organically to naturally to chemically and so forth. And there's certainly a place in the market for everybody in that. But it is a truism that you have to have a certain amount of chemicals used on many, if not all, of the European varieties of grapes that are grown. When you're doing your research on that, did that come into play as part of your decision-making at all?
It did, and I mean, traditionally speaking, I wouldn't even just classify it as European, but certainly vinifera in and of itself tends to require, you know, a much greater degree of control of you know, fungus, you know, powdery mildew, downy mildew, things like that, as well as pest controls, which are required on all of them. The interesting differences on hybrid grapes, for instance, like the Cinciana, those require less chemicals to manage, so that's a nice feature of those. A lot of times they're much more vigorous in their growth habits, so again, you have to weigh that as you lay out your vineyard and define what types of varietals that you're going to grow. Again, we've tried to really focus on from the setup of the vineyard where you're establishing the field zones around the plants where you have basically the bare dirt for about 18 inches on each side of the plant. You know, that's a process by which, one, you have to establish it, and that generally requires the use of chemicals, and then maintaining it. People have embraced a combination of chemicals. We've just recently acquired an in-row cultivator, which we're able to use to really, again, minimize our use of chemicals and that's quite an interesting device in the way it operates, in that it basically kills through the rows without harming the grapevine. So, quite an interesting process.
Wow. Where could somebody learn more about that?
There are a number of places around that have them. This one is the Calderoni, so it is an Italian-made machine that it attaches to the tractor and basically tills down each, as you go down the row on each side, it tills each side, kind of jumping in and out from the center of the row, and when it comes to a vine, it jumps out about 6 or 7 inches, which is a setting that you can do, and then goes back in once you've cleared the vine. Ours is a Calderoni, but there are several different models out there.
Very interesting. Let's go back just for a moment. I was looking at my notes here. When you were installing your vineyard, did you have typical types of pressure-treated posts used, metal posts? What are you using for your posts?
Yeah, we actually went through fairly extensive discussions on that. There's a combination of different types of trellis systems and post systems that one can use. We were very much traditionalist in that we love the look of the wooden post in a vineyard. In our view, it is more aesthetically pleasing, and it also, in the setting that we have, because we tend to encounter some higher winds, the wooden posts give us some added strength in the vineyard, and we have them placed closer together as well, so there's a spacing element that comes into play there. Another option that potential vineyard owners could think about are metal posts, and those have been used very successfully as well. The plus that I would say on the metal posts is they come with the notches to allow you to install your wire. You know, where we were talking about the VSP and the Geneva double curtain types of trellis systems, those metal posts come already pre-notched so that you're able to run your wires, whereas on the wooden posts, you have to come back and install little clips that basically hold the wires in place. So there's little additional labor to installing a wooden post, but again, we love them. We used 4-inch treated round posts in our line posts, and for our end posts, you know, at each row, those are very large timbers. They are 6 to 8 inch round treated posts that end up going about 4 feet in the ground and are put in on a 60 degree incline. so they will keep the wires and the trellis system taut and hold the weight of the grapes, because some of our rows are as long as 750 feet.
750 feet, that's a long row. Wow. And, of course, you probably put those in with a post-pounder machine.
We did. We actually have access to excavator that has a device that is on the head of the excavator that allows the post to be put in very efficiently, very quickly. They go in in about 20 seconds or so.
Wow. Well, we did some steep learning curve stuff here. We dug our first couple rows by hand.
Well, I don't know that I would have the energy or the stamina to dig 10 acres of, you know.
Well, when you're working on a vineyard like ours with almost 40-degree slope on it, you don't have much use for machinery out there. It'll end up down at the bottom of the hill, so we had to do something. But the last half wasn't too bad. We put in, I finally got a Bobcat on tracks with an auger on it, and that helped drill the holes. At least we could drop them in and tamp them down. It wasn't too much work. But the digging the holes by hand, that was not the way to go.
We are in the process of putting in an additional 2 acres of new grapes this year. And once those additional 2 acres are in, we'll have about, 1,200 posts that have been installed. So there's
wow.
No way that I was ever going to dig those by hand.
It's a tremendous amount of work putting in 1 acre, I know that. Ken, thank you very much for sharing with us some of your thoughts on putting in a vineyard. Want to wish you a lot of luck with your wedding event location down there. I know that's an important part of supplemental income, especially when you're getting a winery up and going. So I do hope that you'll give us a chance to come back and re-interview after you've had your tasting room open. Who knows? I just may sneak down there and try a bottle or two, and we'll see how that goes. So thanks very much, Ken, for letting us spend some time with you.
Thank you, Chuck. We appreciate it, and certainly we'd love to have you come visit, and we'll certainly extend the invitation. We're not quite open to the public yet, other than our event business, but certainly as the tasting room comes online and our wines go into full production, we'd love for everyone to come visit and experience not only what we will be producing in terms of wonderful wine, but also the just beautiful setting that I'm so proud to be able to continue the tradition that my family started over 200 years ago and really, continue to be a part of it.
Well, folks, we've been talking on the phone today with Ken Parker, the owner and general manager of the Souther Williams Mountain Vineyard down in Fletcher, North Carolina. Thanks again, Ken, for giving us your time.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay, folks, that's going to be a wrap for today's Mountain Grapevine Radio Show here in Marshall, North Carolina.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!